The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article is titled, To Downsize or Not to Downsize? For some retirees, a bigger home is better. This article by Robin Friedman. As you approach retirement, you may think that downsizing to a smaller home makes a lot of sense. After all, downsizing can lower your living cost and reduce the hassle that comes with taking care of a large house. And if your kids have flown the nest, some of your bedrooms are probably gathering dust anyways. Those are certainly compelling reasons to shift to a less spacious house. But before you pull the trigger, give some thought to the reverse. Quote, upsizing to a larger home that suits your expected lifestyle in retirement. You may, for example, want a house with adequate space for entertaining friends and hosting family members when they visit, or one that has extra bedrooms for a home office, gym, or hobby room. The right choice for you depends on your budget and your vision for retirement. As you weigh your options, follow these steps. Figure out your budget. Your budget should be a key factor as you determine the size of your house, the house you'll buy. A buyer who is 55 or older has a budget because they're going to be entering an era where they're on a fixed income, says Marcy DePlaza, Chief Operating Officer of GL Homes in Sunrise, Florida. That's even true for buyers who can afford homes at higher price points, she says. They're always mindful of their budget and take into consideration what their monthly payment will be. Your monthly expenses hinge on whether you buy a home with cash or finance part of the cost with a mortgage. Many homeowners are sitting on substantial home equity. According to a report from technology and data provider Intercontinental Exchange, U.S. mortgage holders had a record $17.6 trillion in equity entering the second quarter of 2025. If you have a heap of equity in your current home, you may be able to use the proceeds from selling it to buy your next home outright or make a sizable down payment, reducing your monthly mortgage payment. As you construct a budget, you'll need to analyze what your retirement income will look like. If you don't, you risk becoming house poor, spending so much of your income on your home that you have little left to cover other costs. Ken Johnson, a professor of finance at the University of Mississippi, suggests that home buyers follow the 28% rule, which mortgage lenders often use to qualify applicants. Under this rule, homeowners should spend no more than 28% of their gross monthly income on a mortgage payment, including principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. By sticking to this guideline, buyers can avoid overextending their budget for a home that's too large and too expensive for them. And be sure and account for additional cost. You'll also need to factor in other costs associated with home ownership, including utilities, homeowners or condominium association assessments, and home maintenance and repair costs. If you don't have a mortgage payment that rolls in property taxes and homeowners insurance, you'll need to plan for those expenses separately, too. According to a 2023 analysis by Zillow and Thumbtack, a home improvement technology company, homeowners should expect to pay an average of $14,155 a year for the so-called hidden cost of homeownership. Annual costs are even higher in pricey cities such as San Francisco at $22,791 and New York City at $22,776. These costs typically increase along with the size of the house, something prospective buyers should always keep in mind. A larger home often comes with a hidden price tag for escalating maintenance demands, says Jack Earp, an economist for Thumbtack. Larger homes often have more complicated mechanical systems, more expensive flooring, countertops, and other finishes, and bigger lawns, all of which need more frequent and costly upkeep, he says. And consider your lifestyle. In addition to your budget, think about your lifestyle and how it may change. DePlaza says that many GL home buyers initially downsize and later purchase a larger home because they discovered they need more space. Buyers are not always sure what their costs are going to be and what their lifestyle will look like because it's all so new when they retire, she says. You may not entertain often now, but once you're retired and have more time to host barbecues or dinner parties for friends and neighbors, the formal dining room that you didn't think you needed may start to look pretty good. Similarly, having a spare bedroom to use as a home office or gym might become a necessity. On the flip side, you may find that a smaller home is most suitable after all. Silva Clark, age 72, and her husband Alan Clark, 74, recently sold their 2,400-square-foot home in Bellingham, Washington, for $850,000. The couple relocated to Alexandria, Virginia, to be closer to their 2-year-old granddaughter and her parents. The Clarks are currently living in an Airbnb rental while they search for a smaller home. We like to travel and take 3 or 4 overseas trips a month or longer every year, so we don't need a big house, Savannah says. The couple are looking for a low-maintenance home that's about 1,200 square feet with 2 or 3 bedrooms. They no longer need a basement or formal living room, and they want a small yard that doesn't require much attention. When we're not traveling, our granddaughter can visit, so we want an extra bedroom for her, Savannah says. She doesn't care about the size of our house, just the number of toys that are there. Savannah suggests trying out smaller spaces by renting a home or Airbnb for a week, traveling in an RV, or house-sitting, as the Clarks recently did in a 1-bedroom home in France. Evaluate whether the proximity to your partner is going to bug you in a smaller space, she says. If you prefer to have plenty of room to yourself, you probably won't enjoy sharing those close quarters. And think about the layout. While size is a big factor, the floor plan of the home you're considering is equally important. You may want to look for a home with a single story or a primary bedroom on the main floor so you can age in place. Think about privacy. Do you really want your bedroom right next to the guest bedrooms, or would you prefer more separation? If you decide to go smaller, elements such as vaulted ceilings and large windows can make a modestly sized home feel more spacious. Pay attention to features and finishes, too. If you enjoy cooking, perhaps now is the time to splurge on professional-grade appliances and top-of-the-line cabinetry and countertops. Many 55-plus buyers are selling their family homes which might have been dated, says De Plaza. So they want the newest features, and they want to make sure the home is just for them because it could be the last one they buy. De Plaza also recommends that buyers ensure that their new homes have enough storage. Many buyers are giving up houses with basements to move to places such as Florida, where basements aren't common. Regardless of the size of the home, buyers always say they don't have enough storage, she says. Our next article also appeared in Kiplinger Personal Finance. It's a lengthy article, and we probably will not be able to get through all of the article in today's episode, but we'll do the best we can. It's an interesting article titled, Guard Against the New Generation of Fraud and Identity Theft. This article by Kimberly Lankford. Scams are getting more sophisticated and harder to spot. Stay ahead of them with our advice. These days, even the most astute consumers can fall victim to identity theft schemes and financial scams. No longer can you count on obvious red flags to spot a scam, such as a misspelled email from a Nigerian prince or a call from a robotic voice. Now, many fraudulent websites and emails look legitimate, and scammers use personal information they've collected about you to persuade you they're the real deal, and to prompt you to act quickly without questioning the interaction. Artificial intelligence has contributed to the rise of these more sophisticated and realistic schemes. AI has made it much easier for the bad actors to put together absolutely picture-perfect emails, text, and scripts for phone calls. We used to teach people how to detect a phishing text or email, but we don't do that anymore because it's too hard to tell, says Eva Vasquez, CEO of the Identity Theft Resource Center. Making matters worse, deep fake and voice cloning technology have advanced too. In a deep fake, scammers take a video or audio sample of you or your voice and use AI to make it look and sound as though you're speaking. A fraudulent call can be difficult to identify when the voice on the phone sounds exactly like your boss or your grandchild. AI can also help thieves cull information about you and put it into a dossier that they can use to rope you into scams, says Teresa Murray, Consumer Watchdog Director for the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG, a consumer advocacy organization. A scammer can more convincingly pose as a legitimate government agency, financial institution, employer, or trusted family member when they already have your birth date, Social Security number, or numbers for your financial accounts. It's worth protecting this sensitive personal information in all the ways you can control by declining to share your Social Security number unless you're sure it's for a legitimate reason, for example. But at this point, most people can assume that their information has been exposed somewhere, whether as part of a data breach, through companies selling consumer information, or in phishing attacks, says Jennifer Pitt, senior analyst on the fraud and security team for Javelin Strategy and Research. According to a Javelin study, consumers lost a total of $27.2 billion in 2024 from identity fraud, a 19% increase from the previous year. The average losses are getting larger as crooks gather more information about people and gain their trust. The losses hit people of all ages, too. Last year, younger people reported losing money to fraud at a higher rate than older people, 44% of those ages 20 to 29, compared with 24% of those ages 70 to 79, according to the Federal Trade Commission. But older people suffered more sizable losses, with a median loss of $1,000 compared with $417 for people in their 20s. Older people tend to have higher losses because they've had more time to build up their accounts, says Valquez. The steps that worked in the past to protect yourself against ID theft and scams won't always help you now. Use our guide to recognize the evolving tactics criminals are using and to protect your identity and finances. Avoid common scams. The four types of scams below are among the most common lately. By knowing what they are and how they work, you may be able to stay out of a con artist crosshairs. Next generation impersonation scams. The Federal Trade Commission received fraud reports from 2.6 million consumers last year, and the most commonly reported scam category was impersonation scams. Losses to government impersonation scams reached $789 million in 2024, a $171 million increase from 2023, according to the FTC. In an impersonation scam, you'll receive a call, text, or email claiming to be from a government agency, such as the IRS or the Social Security Administration, or your financial institution. The caller may know your name, phone number, email address, and the name of the institution where you have an account, and they may spoof the caller ID to send a realistic-looking email. There's usually a sense of urgency for you to act by, say, sending them money or providing personal information that can help them take over your accounts. The Identity Theft Resource Center recently helped a retired woman who received a call claiming to be from tech support with the brokerage firm where she held her retirement savings. They knew her name, phone number, and the name of the entity where her retirement funds were housed, says Valquez. The caller told her the account had been compromised and that the bad actor was moments away from stealing her money, and the caller asked her to transfer the money to an account they specified to, quote, protect it. They said she'd like to go. She said she'd like to go to a branch of the brokerage firm and ask about it in person, but the caller told her not to report the call because they suspected it was an inside job. The caller asked her to download an app so they could remotely access her device, and then they showed her the supposed fraud. The woman went to the brokerage office to move her retirement funds. The representative who helped her was concerned, but the woman would not tell the representative why she was withdrawing the money. Suspicious of fraud, her brokerage put a hold on the transfer and launched an investigation. It put the woman in touch with the ITRC, whose experts explained that this was a common scam. She stopped the transfer in time. You can contact the ITRC at idtheftcenter.org or 888-400-5530 with questions about potential scams or to get help if you've been a victim of an identity crime. The scammers had just enough information to sound real, which is often the case. They sound credible, so victims feel comfortable filling in the blanks and providing additional information. Government agencies, banks, and other financial institutions won't contact you out of the blue. If you get a call from someone claiming there's an emergency with your account, log in at the provider's website or use its app to check whether a caller's claim is true, says Paul Benda, Executive Vice President of Risk Fraud and Cybersecurity for the American Bankers Association, which has guidance to help people identify phishing scams at banksneverasksthat.com. Grandparent and other relationship scams. Artificial intelligence has made this type of scam much more believable, with fraudsters using deep fakes and voice cloning to match the voice of, say, your grandchild or boss. They'll typically call and say they've been in an accident and need money, or that they need you to buy something for work, for which you'll be reimbursed. Because AI is starting to spoof people's voices, we think it's really important to have a family code word, like butterscotch or peppermint, says Benda. If grandma is panicking as she speaks with someone who is pretending to be you, she should ask for the code word. They may have birth dates and addresses, but they don't have the code word. The National Security Alliance has a web page that where you can hear examples of deep fakes and find resources to help protect against them. Not all scams are high tech. In some cases, criminals send emails or texts impersonating a friend, family member, or colleague. Giselle Acevedo, 26, was in her second week of her dream job in healthcare tech sales at an international company's U.S. office in New Jersey. She received an email that appeared to be from the vice president of sales at the company's headquarters in Germany that asked for her phone number. He then texted her and said that he'd like to surprise her team with a reward for their good work. He asked her to buy 3 gift cards for $200 each and told her she'd be reimbursed for them. She left work to buy the cards, and then he asked her to scratch off the numbers on the back and send a picture. I thought this was a little weird, she says, but she believed that perhaps he needed the information because he was in Europe and she couldn't give him the cards in person. I was coming up with any excuse to try to be as helpful as I could, being that this came from my vice president, she says. She became suspicious after he continued to ask her to get more gift cards, so she sent the VP a message on Slack, their internal communication platform that her company uses. He didn't answer, and when she checked his status, it said he was away. Then I do the math and realize in Europe it's 11 p.m. So who have I been speaking to? She contacted her bank and reported the scam to the police, but they couldn't get her money back because she'd authorized the purchases. And job scams. Losses related to job scams grew from $90 million in 2020 to $501 million in 2024, according to the FTC. Employment scams can be particularly effective because you want a job and you're very vulnerable, says Lisa Plagmeier, executive director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. In a common scam, recruiters text you with offers or job postings that aren't legitimate, or they may create a fake job search site to gather your personal information. Some even conduct interviews and hire you, then ask for your bank information to deposit your paycheck, says Valquez. If you aren't sure a job posting is authentic, check to see whether it appears on the employer's website. If scammers have recently put up fake listings claiming to be from the company, the website may include an announcement with that information, too. Plagmeier recently talked with a woman in her early 20s who thought she had been hired for a job. The company sent her a check, told her to deposit it, and then asked her to wire the money to a vendor to buy a laptop she'd use for the job. The check was from a small-town bank in the Midwest where the company was supposedly located, and it looked legitimate. She deposited the check and wired the money. But then the bank said the check was fraudulent. By that time, the money had been wired and was gone. Some scammers invest a lot of time into their schemes, working to gain the trust of their victims. Brenda S., age 56, who works in higher education in central Pennsylvania and didn't want to use her last name, submitted her resume to what she thought was a well-known recruiting company so she could find some extra work to help pay for her daughter's wedding. She received a text message claiming to be from the recruiting company and asked whether she was willing to work in a part-time remote capacity. She said yes, and a woman called her. The woman explained that the job would involve testing the order processing systems of online products, and Brenda would get paid for clicking through the websites. The woman communicated with her through private messaging service, WhatsApp, and Brenda made $187 during training, which she transferred into her own bank account. It couldn't have been easier, she says. But then they told her she would need to deposit $100 of her own money into a digital wallet to get started, and they showed her how to convert her dollars into crypto. As she did more work, they asked her to deposit more money before she could withdraw her earnings. Meanwhile, the woman who trained her shared stories and pictures of her young daughter through WhatsApp to build a rapport and trust with Brenda. She totally groomed me and sucked me in, says Brenda. Brenda finally became suspicious and investigated the pitch on Scammers Tracker. That's located at BBB.org, or the Better Business Bureau. This is a searchable database from the Better Business Bureau where people share information about scams. There, she found similar stories from other victims. The Better Business Bureau estimates that the Scam Tracker has helped prevent people from losing $43 million. And tax and benefit scams. Tax scammers prey upon your desire for a refund or fear of an audit. They may contact you by text, email, or phone and let you know that you can receive a special tax credit or refund if you fill out a form with your personal information or bank account number. This pitch was common when the IRS was issuing stimulus checks early in during the COVID-19 pandemic, and again in December 24. The IRS will never call, text, or email you unexpectedly. For information on how to identify whether the IRS is truly contacting you, you can visit the IRS's website at irs.gov. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us again next time. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.